He definitely wants Boogie Cousins on the Pacers. I mean, I thought it was crazy. And he seemed pretty lucid, but he was saying that he would trade Paul George for Boogie Cousins at the drop of a hat. And I was like, Colson, you're crazy. And he was like, no, no, seriously. So tweet at Colson.
No, he wanted, he said he wanted Boogie and Vlade for,
for Larry Bird.
For Larry Bird.
Yeah, so just prepare to,
It'll be great.
It'll be perfect.
Y'all motherfuckers don't watch us play throughout the year, to tell you the truth. I'm gonna be real with you, and I don't care if I get fined.
I got my sweet jerry box with some shoes on.
That train is off the track.
Who doesn't love the bouncy castle?
Hitler. Just prepare to, just prepare to be awash in unbeatable goodness.
Welcome, Pacers fans. You are listening to The Unbeatables, your semi-weekly Pacers podcast, and this is episode 169, coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana. I'm your host, Joey Gafrida, the man behind the dials and season ticket holder. This show, we're talking about the ceiling of the Pacers. What a stat of the week. We're going to talk about Boogie and Melo. Joining me are two of our three analysts, coast to coast, like buttered toast. First from the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., it's the doctor, Jason Triplett.
What is up, Pacers fans? What's up, Undebeatables? As you're listening to this, it will be St. Patrick's Day, which is, I'm guessing, where Thursday was invented. Colson would want me to tell you to drink up. Have a Guinness.
Or five.
Coming to you from Eugene, Oregon, out west, our enforcer, John Harper.
What's going on, boys? It's that time of year. We get to talk about some home stretch basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Excited.
And also, good luck to everybody on your brackets. Probably they've been busted already at this point.
Right.
In the day. I know mine for certain will be.
The last one I filled out, as soon as I put in my last pick and hit submit, it just said busted and just deleted it.
What was the thing? Warren Buffett this year put up money. You know, usually he puts up a gajillion dollars if anybody picks the whole thing correctly. And this year he put up half a gajillion dollars if you could pick the first two rounds correctly.
I think.
Because no one ever wins.
Yeah, because it's like a statistical impossibility to.
Not impossibility. Improbability.
Improbability.
In practice, though, it's an impossibility.
All right, Kevin Garnett. Nothing right. That's impossible.
If you put your mind to it.
Asymptotically approaching impossibility.
Can't rule out the possibility. Frink.
First thing we want to talk about this show is the ceiling of the Pacers. So we've got CJ Miles back from injury. Added Ty Lawson. Should be good by now. Small sprain. Rodney Stuckey back from his injuries. Jan's had some injury problems this season. And for the most part, the rest of the whole team is healthy. And Jason, you said they have formed like Voltron. Mm-hmm. To wreak some damage in the Eastern Conference. Where do you think, how high can these Pacers get?
Well, I don't know the answer to that question. With Ty Lawson on the team, higher than previously expected. But that's just a bad joke, really.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Sorry. I couldn't figure out how to phrase it so that it was actually funny and not sad.
I thought, yeah, so it worked.
Yeah. I mean, I like this team. I like all the pieces. I think we're playing well, right now, which is when you want to start playing well, is in March and April, right? I don't think it would be statistically improbable for us to be a 50-win ball club. Since we already have 30 losses, we'd have to go whatever that is, 15-2 over the last stretch here.
So you're saying there's a chance?
There is a chance. I mean, I've been watching the Warriors all year. I know that teams are capable of going long stretches without losing many games. So, but I like us in the 45-46 win range. I think that we can go. It would be 11-5-ish or something over the last stretch here.
Yeah. I mean, I think when you look at the schedule, you feel pretty good about that, even if you're just beating the teams that you should, right? Mm-hmm. We've got a fairly home-heavy close to the season. We've got some real gimmies in there. And with the way that we're playing, you'd like to think that we could pick off a couple that we're not going to be favored to win as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think – I mean, we're 2.5 games back from the 4 seed right now. Our strength of schedule is not quite as soft as some of the teams ahead of us in this, but I think that with what we've added and having the best player in the Eastern Conference besides LeBron James, I think that we can push to a 5 seed. I think that's legitimate.
So you think that we could leapfrog? That would be Atlanta and Charlotte that we would leapfrog. Yes. Or do you have another team that's higher up that's going to fall down?
I'm not – I mean, it'll be interesting to see how Boston closes the season. They're a good team, but as other teams are ramping up their efforts, Boston may drop a few that they shouldn't as well.
Yeah, and I don't know what their strength of schedule is, but it's probably harder than what the Pacers' schedule coming up is, right? Like, I think Charlotte and Washington and us have the easiest ones, right?
Yeah. They got a few tough ones sprinkled in there. They've got at Golden State, which is a loss, obviously. They've got versus Oklahoma City. They've got a game against Toronto, Atlanta, Miami. It's certainly not easy.
Sure.
When they just lost Jay Crowder for, I think, a couple weeks.
Oh, really? He's
been a real contributor for them.
Oh, yeah. That's huge.
It's huge.
What about you, Joey? Where do you see us? If you put a number on it at this point.
I mean, I think number-wise, I'm thinking I guess seed-wise, I'm hoping for the 5th seed. What I wanted earlier in the year was to get to the top half.
Sure.
Top 4. But at this point it's not looking like that's going to happen. You know, you want to get home court at least in the first round. But the sort of the good thing about staying on the this side of the bottom four is that the teams that we really don't want to play, we won't have to play those in the first round. Particularly like Atlanta and Charlotte, who have been more trouble. Like I don't mind playing Miami. We've played Miami in the playoffs. We know what we're getting into. Mm-hmm. They're, of course, different than they have been. I'm not too scared of Boston, not too scared of Toronto. I know it's going to happen if we play Cleveland. Mm-hmm. But we're not going to hopefully be in the 8th spot at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But to bring it back to the way you framed this whole thing was now that we're getting people healthy, what is the potential of this team? And I think that what's really nice is that what's been our weakness all year has been our bench, I think. And I guess the fact that people are in and out of the lineup has also hurt. But all of the guys that we're getting back now and with Ty Lawson adding to the roster are all bench guys, which I think solves that biggest problem. You know what I mean? And I think that consistency-wise, since putting Turner into the starting lineup and sort of establishing that identity, that sort of consistency thing is ironed out, knock on wood, hoping there's no more injuries, right, to anybody in that unit. So I think that the potential is super high, right, because it's not like we're trying to establish a new cohesiveness with our main unit at some level. It's sort of this secondary unit, which, the risk-reward – or whatever, the potential good that they can do versus the potential bad that they can do it's a nice ratio, right? They have, it's harder for them to hurt us than it is for them to help us, right? If that made any sense.
Yeah, and they play, you know, they play less, like, I guess, along with that, they play fewer minutes total. Mm-hmm. And if they're doing poorly, you pull them out. If they're doing great, you leave them on. And in the playoffs, they just play fewer minutes anyway. Mm-hmm. You've got a shorter rotation.
For sure. And it's well documented that I'm always conservative on my Pacer picks. So I think a 5 seed is not what you would hear if you talk to our team or our coaching staff. I think that they believe that they're going to be in the top half of the bracket. And I think they have good reason to think so. Mm-hmm. You know, we haven't had a bunch of great runs this season. What was it, last season we had a bunch of really long losing streaks, like four or five of six games or more. And we still ended up with a, you know, basically a 500 record. And we haven't been able to string together a bunch of wins this year. But I think looking at the schedule, you know, there's a chance for us to string together five, six game stretches here.
Yep.
And it doesn't take much for us to make up ground if we're gonna be ripping off winning streaks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when you look at what Ty Lawson is bringing, I mean, this guy could easily add 5 points a game to what we do with his offense.
I think the other thing, we've spent a lot of time on this podcast talking about the Pacers' inability to close out close games and their struggles with that. But I think in the last week, we've seen sort of a reversal of that trend at some level. You know, got 3 wins last week, I guess, against the Wizards, the Spurs, and the Mavericks, where it was all close down the stretch, and the Pacers were the more aggressive team in all of those situations and really closed all of those games out. They won those games. It wasn't as if the other team lost those games. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And we're in that situation. You know, the silver lining of losing a bunch of tight games down the stretch is that you're in a bunch of those situations. And so I think we're finally learning from all of that experience and putting it all together and figuring out how to close games.
Sure.
Which I think is super, a very, very positive trend for this team. There's not no only question for the regular season, but going into the playoffs, right?
Exactly right. Basketball, right. There's no question that that pays dividends once you hit April. Mm-hmm. And, you know, good on the organization for listening to the pod. Mm-hmm. Pops Colson has some harsh words for Frank Vogel last week, but clearly mm-hmm. he took it to heart. And, I mean, I think that the first rule of clutch basketball is don't worry about it, right?
Don't talk about clutch basketball, right?
Second rule of clutch basketball, don't talk about clutch basketball.
Yeah.
But no, I think that the first thing that you have to do is be able to play through the bad shot or the bad possession or the bad call or, mm-hmm. you know, the injury and get on to the next possession, right? You've got to have a short memory. Mm-hmm. And I think that our team did a great job this week of just playing through whatever was going on, getting into what they were supposed to be doing offensively and defensively and leaving the last possession behind. And that's the first step, I think, to really playing great clutch basketball. And that's really heartening.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And playing with a little bit more looseness too, you know. Mm-hmm. On the one hand, you want to be focused because you don't want to be making mistakes, but you don't want to be so tight that you're then making mistakes, you know.
Right.
It's a tough balance to strike, I think. But it is. I think we're getting there. I think we're finding our way at some level.
Yeah. I mean, I think the teams that are most successful in clutch situations play the same way in the last minute that they play in the first minute most of the mm-hmm. time, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's just a hell of a lot easier said than done when all the lights are bright and the people are screaming, you know?
Yep.
I guess for me, what it comes down to, you know, to give it a number. You know, I think with Ty Lawson, with a healthy CJ Miles, with a fully healthy team, I think the Pacers could be the second best team in the East. You know, over maybe performance wise, maybe at this point not record wise, you know, over Boston, Toronto, you know, the Miami, the teams ahead of them. But it sort of depends on how the bracket would lay it out. But they could get to the Eastern Conference Finals, I think.
Yeah, there's a road to that. I mean, that's the first time I've said that all season, but I think there is a road to that.
So it would be play. To do that, you would have to avoid the four or the five.
You got to avoid the four.
I think, right?
For sure.
And then you – so say we're the sixth seed and we play Boston in the first round. We beat them. And then we play Toronto in the second round.
Sure.
And they're just happy to be in the second round because they haven't been there before.
Smack those guys up a little bit.
Literally in their playoff, in their franchise history. So
I mean,
we've got dudes that have been through battles. So.
Right. And we're going to have the best player on the court in every series in the Eastern Conference unless we face the Cleveland Cavaliers. And sure. that counts.
So that's my ceiling, is the Eastern Conference Finals.
What's your – is there any – we all sound very confident right now. Is there anybody that's afraid that, you know, we're talking about we're only X number of games out of the third spot, but we're also only two
glossing
games out
over
of the
ninth fact.
Spot. I don't know why we would talk about that.
And Chicago is getting people back. Well, Butler came back, but now he's back out again, I guess.
Oh, and Gasol's out, too.
Oh, and Gasol's out. Yeah, so that hurts them. So it seems like we're not afraid of dropping spots to, say, Detroit or Chicago, for that matter. I think Washington's a done deal, personally. I think that there's no threat of them. They just look like a shell of a team right now.
Right. Well, and they're five games back of us. I mean, maybe they can overtake a struggling Detroit team, but they don't catch us. Mm-hmm. Not with the schedule that we have left. I think that the fight for the eighth seed should be really interesting, but I don't think that we should be a part of that conversation.
Yeah, hopefully.
With, you know, barring a, you know, something bad happening.
Yeah, I mean,
I won't even say it.
But hopefully we've exhausted our. You know, we've been battling injuries all year at this team, and we haven't had anything major, I guess, but
right.
Hopefully we're coming to the good side of that injury luck pendulum.
And I think that, you know, the really great thing about deepening out the bench a little bit is that hopefully some of these games we're going to have well in hand in the fourth quarter, and we can really give some rest to our, you know, top eight rotation guys. So come playoff time, we'll have a very healthy, very ready eight-man rote to go out there and make a statement.
Yep. So I want to now I just thought of something, and it's kind of an aside, but I want to hear what your guys' opinion are. So we bring in Ty Lawson, right? And there was a report during the San Antonio game. I think Jeremiah Johnson was talking about. He was talking to Ty Lawson. And he's like, "So what's, you know, is it going to be hard for you to learn the playbook, or you know, is it going to be a big learning curve to get into the rotation here?" And he was saying that, no, you know, he played under Brian Shaw in Denver, and they run a lot of the same stuff in Indiana. Which on the one hand is nice, because Ty Lawson hopefully will quickly integrate, and I think we saw that he has the ability to affect the game right away. But on the other hand, it kind of gave me pause that we're still running the same stuff that we were running when Brian Shaw was on the team,
yeah.
When we had, you know, one of the worst offenses in the league.
And a lot of different players, too.
Yeah.
Right.
Is that like, a real thing? Is that just like maybe like the bones of it are the same and there's lots of hopefully flourishes on top of that? Or I guess my question is, what is Nate McMillan doing? What is his job exactly?
What is exactly that you do here?
I'm a people person, damn it.
I'm a people person. I deal with the engineers.
I'm hoping, I'm really hoping that it's like the you know the bones of, you know, an offense, and it's the concepts and big picture kind of stuff that they've adjusted and are not running the same thing that they are in Denver, because those guys were not very good, and and, you know, like you said, like the Pacers, when they ran those things, when Shaw was here, the team was, their offense was not great. And they, you know, you want to have your team run an offense and defense that plays to the strengths of the players that you have. So I'm just really hoping that's changed as the personnel has changed.
Not only that, but when you're running the same playbook for 3 years, how hard is it to game plan for that team? I mean, there's just so much film on you, right?
Yep.
Like, even if you've just kept the nuts and bolts of the thing, you know what the principles are. You know exactly basically what everybody's going to be doing. But the flip side of that for me is that that's why Ty Lawson is so important, because he breaks down defenses. Yep. He gets them out of position, and then he understands the angles and how to make that ball move to the right place, right? So almost regardless of what we're running, I think he's a great add for us.
Yep.
But I don't have a good answer to what Nate McMillan's doing, I guess. I will say this, though. Our pace has gone up. Our offensive efficiency, our net rating has gone up. So all those things are good.
Yep. Yep. This is all true. Yeah, we're like eighth in the league in pace or something like that.
Yeah.
Which is pretty solid. And we're scoring 103 points a game or something like that, right. Which is – or 102 something, or which is right where Larry Bird wanted us. And
right. Especially with
so all of those things are good. I think that we're a better offensive team than we were. Mm-hmm. But it was just one of these, and maybe it was just a throwaway comment that Ty Lawson didn't want to really talk to Jeremiah Johnson. He was like, "Yeah, Shaw was there, so blah blah blah." But it just perked up my ears there. I was like, "Wait a minute!"
And I mean, part of it may be too. You know, you don't want to implement too much in this first year. This has been a big transition year for us. Sure. We have changed the way that we play defense. It's a little bit more opportunistic and a little bit more trapping. And there's a lot of changes that we put in.
Yep.
And maybe next year is the year where we really make some, you know, quantum shift in the way that we approach offense. Mm-hmm. I think that's coming. But I think that this year in many ways is a rebuilding year for us.
Yep.
So.
Oh, it absolutely is. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's plenty of upside. And, you know, if we can score 103 points a game and play the defense that we know how to play, we're still in a position to be very successful.
Mm-hmm. I think it's about time for a break, gentlemen.
All right.
I've been excited. I've been listening to the song a pretty good amount over the last couple of days here. This one's from Safe and Sound. I found through our friends over at Bringing Down the Band, local. If you're not familiar, they cover Indianapolis and the Midwest music, mostly hip-hop. But they've always got good stuff. If you need anything to listen to, just head over to their site, bringingdowntheband.com. We'll get a link to it in the show notes. But this one is from Safe and Sound. The song's called Change My Number. Check it out. We'll get the link to it in the show notes. Okay, here we go.
Hey, how you doing? No, hell no. What the fuck? Hey, how's it?
I changed my number just to talk to you. I changed my number just to call you. I changed my number just to talk to you. I changed my number just to call you. Ooh, I'm sure you got my old 7 block by now. I'm sure you got my old 7 blocks. Yeah, I'm sure you got my old 7 block by now. I'm sure you got my old 7 blocks. Hello. Do you hate me that much now? Yeah. 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 Do you hate me that much now? Do you still stay way, way uptown? Or you got a lot of petty in your cup now? And you know I'm steady hella in the cut now. And I know I've got a lot of things to make up. I know I've got a lot of myself to shape up. Shit, I might be high right now. Word to King, and I'll probably should watch my mouth. If you know what I mean. Spilling feelings, if you just give me a minute, I can probably still replenish all the happy in your image. We done did it, reconsider, quit it, trying to forget it. Wicked is it, I didn't change it up for nothing. Could you listen, girl? Serge Ibaka, heard you block my number since the last debacle. Well, heard about your word of mouth and told me to call you. Searched around, you lurked and found your girl without you. It's been hell. I know I've been worried about you, can't you tell? I changed my number just to talk to you. I changed my number just to call you. I changed my number just to talk to you. I changed my number just to call you. I'm sure you got my old 7 block by now. I'm sure you got my old 7 blocks. Yeah, I'm sure you got my old 7
sure you got my old 7 blocks. Well, even Jordan changed numbers when he tried to come back. Still on that bullshit. She said, boy, you're playing games, you live for losing, running back. Trying to think of all the things that I could do to win you back. Like a million affinities worth of sorries I would put the globe in the centerpiece, put the planet in the back. If you block my new number, I send my feelings via feel, feel. Juno, should it be like that? I heard you had to play the Kim Bay. Got crushed by a woman on a Wednesday. I heard a text, telephone, no entry. Then I got a call back on a Tuesday, telling me how you're steadily mad at me. I'm expressing my apathy. I say, I need the space. You send me pics of the galaxy, but you pulling me close. Heard you related to gravity. We can put it in the past, but I think that I should ask. Do you hate me that much now? Yeah, I just think that I should ask you. Do you hate me that much now? Yeah. Do you hate me that much now? Yeah. Do you hate me that much now? Yeah. I changed my number just to talk to you. I changed my number just to call you. I changed my number just to talk to you. I changed my number just to call you. Ooh, I'm sure you got my old 7 block by now. I'm sure you got my old 7 blocks. Yeah, I'm sure you got my old 7 blocks.
Back from the break. Thanks to Safe and Sound. Definitely, if you like that, we'll get a link to the show notes. You can always buy. Let's support your local artists. These guys are out of Chicago, St. Louis, so it's some Midwest talent. I always like that. Next, we want to get into my stat of the week.
Joey, stat of the week.
This week, Jason, I think you tweeted this during the week of basketball that was. The Pacers are shooting the free throws really, really well recently. Love that. That's what we want to see. Good fundamentals. The last three games, the ones against Washington, San Antonio, and Dallas, they shot 74 of 79, 94%. In over four games, 83 of 92 is 90%. That's as a team. 90% as a team. It's amazing.
That's pretty good for Steph Curry.
Yeah, that's good for any player, let alone as a team that has Jan Mahimi on it. He's been making his too, so shout out to him. But shout out to the whole team. That's how you get wins on the road. That's how you get wins against good teams. Making those. They're cold free throws. You get to stand there unguarded. And, you make those, and you're going to win some more games.
Well, this is definitely this is coming on the heels of a stretch where the Pacers did not shoot free throws super well. You know, we talked about a couple weeks ago, Paul George stepping in the line in that Milwaukee game to close it out and missing two down the stretch. So this is great to see, and this is Indiana basketball fans have to love this. This is like classic. Yeah, this is what you're expected to do in Indiana, is shoot at a 90% clip.
Yeah, this is Bob Knight, defend your man, hit your free throws, try not to get choked out by your coach basketball.
Exactly. Just fundamentals, guys.
Just fundamentals. And you're right, Jason. This is it's one of those things that makes a difference. I mean, when you beat the Spurs by 3 points and you had to shoot 90% from the line to do it, you know that if you didn't hit those, you didn't win the game. This is big stuff, and it doesn't feel like a big deal in the first quarter, but missed free throws are one of those things that'll come back to haunt you, right? Bad turnovers, missed free throws,
yep.
Bad techs, these sort of things will haunt you.
Yep. Those are unforced errors, basically. Mm-hmm. You want to cut those down to a minimum. And shout out to Chris Denary. I know you listen to the pod. Stop jinxing him. Just don't say anything about the free throw shooting, unless they're doing horribly. And then be like, yeah, this is horrible.
You can show the stat on the screen. That's okay. Just don't say the words out loud with your face.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's so close to the players. Yeah, anti-shadow. Yeah, you're welcome to talk about it after the game. It's fine.
Yep.
In the post game, say, the Pacers were perfect from the line. It was awesome.
But when we're 26 of 26 and coming down the stretch against Dallas, how about mum's the word there, buddy?
You can't do it.
No.
So that's some good fundamental basketball.
And fundamental podcasting.
And fundamental podcasting. There's other teams that don't play by the – they don't have the same values that Indiana does. One would be, I'd say, Sacramento. Harper, you sent over a little love letter from the Sacramento Bee to DeMarcus Cousins, ripping this dude a new one for his childish behavior. What did you – can you tell our listeners what Mr. Cousins has been doing out there?
So I know it will come as a shock to anyone who listens to this show, but Sacramento, not a great team. They're, of course, falling apart again. There was an incident earlier this year where Vlade got all up in his coach on a sideline. Management, namely Vlade Divac, didn't do anything about it. Well, guess what? It happened again. Boogie had to be restrained by a coach during a timeout because he didn't feel like his coach was protecting him from the refs. Joey Crawford wasn't even at this game. It leads to a suspension from Divac. Apparently, Boogie continued this into the locker room too, in front of the team. All bad stuff. Net results. There's just sort of a hilarious article that we'll link to, but it's a Sacramento Bee reporter. This is a hometown guy, and right at the lead, he's trade him, cut him, whatever. It would be a steal if the Kings could get 50 cents on the dollar, a bargain at 35 cents, and a good deal at a quarter, maybe wow. even a nickel. God. I mean, I think that we've talked on this show about whether Carl or Boogie needs to go. Obviously, we know where this particular reporter, Andy Ferrillo is his name, by the way, where he stands. Does this change your measurement of that team? I mean, is this still really just a Boogie problem?
I mean, no, the whole franchise is a freaking mess. I mean, not much is clear. But it's hard to see for me to see a way that they move forward with this guy. I mean,
which one, Cousins or Carl?
Or Ferrillo?
Any of them. All of them. Cut them all.
Carl's gone.
Carl, they basically fired Carl earlier this year and then said, oh, no, we're not actually going to fire you. So he's a dead man walking. He has no authority at all, which is just not, you know, he's essentially like
it's not a good way to coach.
He's like a stepdad that's, you know, in the middle of getting a divorce.
You're not my dude. Real dad.
Exactly. Yeah. And you're leaving town, motherfucker. Why am I listening to you? But Boogie just has...
He's frustrated.
I don't know. And so what are they gonna, what could they do? They bring in like the 11th coach that he's had in his career? Like, is he really going to respond to that? Like, it's a mess. I think that they should just trade him and rebuild that whole thing. Blow that whole thing up and just Philadelphia 76er the heck out of that thing. And the other thing is that if Boogie is your super duper star, which he is absolutely a super duper talent. He's an all-star, hands down. But he hasn't led that team to more than 30 wins in a season in any year that he's been there.
Correct.
And that is not a good sign. Right?
That's just not a good result. Those are – I mean, that's a – right? That's a fact.
Yeah. And if we have a nice, decent in – of years that he's been at this and at an all-star level, and he still hasn't done it. So, and this is a game, you know, basketball is a game of five guys on the floor, and one guy can significantly alter this.
Mm-hmm.
These games, and he's just not able to do it somehow.
Yeah, I think it's time for the Kings to just get rid of Boogie. That, like, I think he's one of the best players in the league, maybe one of these top 10 guys. He is just unstoppable when he gets going, but he's doing damage to your locker room. You know, when a player is disrespectful to the coach, you know, coaches, you know, privately and publicly, and it, particularly when it goes unpunished, you're going to lose respect from all of the players. This team is going to go nowhere. They have, you know, systemic problems and personnel problems. Together, which results in never winning more than 30 games. So, I think he's got to go regardless. But they need other changes to go along with that. But, you know, he's left kind of a I don't know, stain on the organization, I'd say.
Yeah. Yeah, so we talked last week, and we do often on this podcast, about the Spurs and their consistency and excellence.
Their annoying Brady Bunchiness.
The Kings are the anti-Spurs. Mm. They have not won over 40 games since 2005, 2006, which was also the last time that they made the playoffs. That's a solid decade of just crap.
Yeah, but what's so aggravating about this is, who didn't see this coming? Like, we all knew this was coming.
Sure.
This was going to be the end product of what they put out there. You don't have to be you could be a passing fan and know that this season was not going to work for them.
Yep.
You had the coach and the best player fighting. You added more knuckleheads in the offseason. This thing was going to blow up. And you already knew that Vlade Divac was having trouble orchestrating all this, right? He hadn't established himself in the right position. He hadn't put George Karl in the right position. And frankly, they haven't put Boogie in a position to succeed either. This is a guy who is, I think, is third or fourth in the league in scoring. He's 27 points, 11 and a half rebounds a game. He gets over a block a game. He's the only big man in the top five in scoring this league.
Mm-hmm.
There are still teams that want to play a little bit of low post. This is your guy, right? This guy has value in this league. But if you're going to take on a guy like Boogie, you have to put him in the right place, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to have to acknowledge the fact that he's not Stephen Curry, right? He's not Paul George. You're going to have to do some things. You're going to have to maybe make concessions, but you're certainly going to have to try and figure out how to keep him happy on and off the court, but also impose discipline when it's necessary. That team has failed in every respect.
Yeah, no, he has to go to a place that has an infrastructure that is clear and a chain of command that is solid and a team with veterans on it that can help shape him and a team that has a really good relationship with a sports psychologist.
Hmm. Or,
'cause I think that that dude legit needs serious therapy. Like, I mean, obviously I'm seeing this from a way distance, right? But like
mm-hmm. –
And we've talked about it on the podcast, but he gets angry at everything. Like, the smallest thing in the world just sets him off from, like, the first minute of the game. And it's like I understand that on one level, like, you know, he's hyper competitive, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's – you don't want to take that away. But, like
– But you got to channel it.
You have to channel it. And the way that he's doing it clearly doesn't lead to winning basketball, right? You know, I go to his stat page on ESPN and I click on postseason stats. There are no stats available there, buddy.
Nope.
Like,
404 not found.
If you're so competitive that you want to win everything all the time, you got to get to the postseason at some point. You know, if you want to be a Hall of Famer, you got to be playing in May at some point.
And it's not just about putting the ball through the hoop, right? You have to be a teammate. You have to have a team around you that wants to play for you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Harper, I think you mentioned that he was upset. The reason that, you know, he went off on his coaches was that he said he was not being protected from the referees, which is just as ridiculous that he – you know, the last time the Pacers played the Kings – you know, I saw a couple of times George Karl had to, you know, sort of – he had to go yell at the referees because he could see that Boogie was getting upset mm-hmm. with the lack of calls, which were, you know, whatever. They were – I think
– It's the NBA. It's full of bad calls.
Whatever. Like,
sorry, just is.
But –
Well, less so now that Joey Crawford is gone.
But it was one of these things where George Karl had to go nuts and clearly, like – it was clearly like a facade. He had to go do that to keep Boogie happy.
Yeah.
And so here's what I didn't mention in this. This outburst happened in a game against the Cavs. He got called for foul. Then there was a no call. As they pushed the ball the other way, he stopped to argue with the ref. The Cavs got up three shots, ripped down 2-0 boards before they got their two out of that possession. Right? I mean, that's just – What are you going to do? And he hadn't even passed half court yet because he's arguing with the ref. And you can't have it. And look, I understand if you're a Sacramento fan how you'd want to keep this guy, right? I understand because he is such an insane talent. But I think at some point you have to admit that your organization is not good enough to make him a good player or a good teammate. I just think you have to accept that.
So where does he go? What franchise is going to take the chance on him and throw the Kings ransom package to get him away from there? The Celtics, we think?
That's the first one I'm thinking is the Boston Celtics.
So, Jason, your suggestion was that he should go to a team with a well-defined infrastructure and good veteran players.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to go completely the other way and say that he's a Knick.
Mm.
Oh, Phil God. Jackson loves this project, right?
That would be great theater, that's for sure. Can you imagine the duo, the two-headed monster of leadership that is DeMarcus Cousins and Carmelo Anthony?
And Coach X.
And Coach, we don't know who. Who's being puppet mastered by Phil Jackson and actually has no authority.
Wait,
in the world's most famous arena every night.
Where do I buy tickets?
Exactly. With the most intense media coverage. If you thought that Andy Farrillo was tough.
That's right. If you thought the Sacramento Bee was giving you the business. Wait till the New York Post is on you every freaking day.
But I really feel like Phil Jackson loves the idea of this challenge.
Yeah.
Phil Jackson loves a troubled player with great talent.
Yeah, but the Knicks don't have anything to give the Kings to get DeMarcus Cousins away, right? You got to be getting two first round draft picks back for this guy. Plus something else, probably.
You think the Celtics are going to give that up?
I would if I were them.
If I'm Brad Stevens, I do not. The one thing that team has is they're the mini Spurs. They've got a team that really gels well. They seem to get along very well, and they're really well coached. Boogie could throw a monkey wrench in that in like 6 hours. He might not even be off the plane yet.
So what his only option – he needs to go play for the Spurs is like the only way that we're going to salvage Boogie's career. Like this seems like a waste that we – you know what I mean? Because like where else can he go?
Their big man slots are pretty full right now.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean – for Boogie's sake, where does he need to go? I mean, I don't think the Spurs have any interest in him.
No, not at all. That's what yeah.
What coach could handle him?
But I mean, if the mini Spurs, if he can't go to the mini Spurs in Boston, where can he go?
I mean, I think that if you're looking at this from a how do we make Boogie successful as a ball player, the best destination for him, for me, would probably be Dallas. I think that Rick Carlisle is a really great coach.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I think that they've got an aging four. They could use a five.
He would take Carlisle would take no guff, I don't think.
He's a pretty authoritarian coach, I think, in a lot of ways. And I think Mark Cuban would absolutely have his back in whatever way he needed to. I think that would be a good destination for him. He may not be happy there for 3 years, but I think that would be great for his career.
And Dirk would keep him in line, we hope.
I mean, that's
what
a good
is the package that Dallas could send the Kings that would make it worth their while?
Dallas is going to be buying a lot of players anyway because they just have a bunch of money and the salary cap's going up. So I think that they'd be okay parting with one first-round draft pick, and I don't think that there's a lot of teams willing to throw two at it. I mean, God forbid that the Sixers pick him up. Like, you feel like it's coming, right? You feel like it's coming, right? Because they have so many draft picks. They're the team that has the most
ammo. So much young talent. I mean,
and so much young talent. I mean, that
Jahlil Okafor and whoever, that draft pick. And
that's the train wreck that I want to see, even more than New York. But, I mean, just obviously a terrible idea.
Yeah, for sure. It'll be interesting to see because I think, yeah. I mean, the Kings, to their credit, finally suspended Boogie for his anti-authoritarian behavior, which they had been reticent to do his entire career.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't exactly result in anything good for them. They're still in the midst of a 1-9 stretch of basketball. So,
right. No, the appeasement strategy is no longer effective.
Yeah.
If ever it was. And I think that in the preseason, we called for at least get rid of Carl, maybe get rid of Boogie.
Yeah.
And I think – I can't remember exactly, but I think at least one of us had the stance, get rid of Vlade Divac too. It was a short experiment that's not playing out. I'm with you, Jason. You just got to tear that thing apart. I mean, yeah. As far as I'm concerned, build around Rondo. Like, he's not the most, you know, level-headed guy in the universe, but he's a hell of a lot better option than Boogie Cousins right now.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, Harper, you mentioned the New York Knicks as a possible destination for Boogie Cousins. This week, our friend Jalen Rose was talking about the Knicks, specifically Carmelo Anthony. And if he was James Dolan, he said he doesn't want him on his team. Why would he say something like that? Carmelo Anthony is a baller, right? Leader of the team.
He's an all-star.
He's an all-star.
Man, just a couple weeks ago on this show, after we played the Knicks, it was Carmelo who had the last shot of the game. It was a three-pointer that he airballed, if memory serves. And he kind of laughed it off and chuckled. And, you know, maybe disappointment is something to get used to when you play for the Knicks. But, Joey, your observation was that Porzingis was really mad about it, right?
Yeah.
And that's what you want from the leader of your team, right? It's a little fire, right? A little fire for losing to a team. And if you're the Knicks, if you're Carmelo Anthony, you got to think at that time we were a beatable team, right? And if you want to be the leader, you got to be pissed about every failure. From the first minute to the 48th, you got to be pissed about every loss. And that's not something that Carmelo has shown, right? He hasn't shown himself to have a bunch of leadership in the well.
No, and he's definitely, I mean, he's way more interested in developing his brand and whatever his side businesses are and being a New Yorker than mm-hmm. he is being a New York Knick, you know?
Which is lucrative.
Hey, he is winning at the game of life. Another thing Jalen Rose likes to say.
So, right.
You know, he's doing fine. But yeah, the other thing is that while he's still an all-star, I think that he's 2 to 3 years past the time where you could make the argument that if Carmelo's the best player on your team,
sure,
you could win a championship. And I used to, you know, that sort of question has been asked about him his entire career. And for a long time, I was a Melo defender and was saying, mm-hmm. look, this dude's like a top five guy, a top three guy in the league. You can definitely win a title with him. Now, I don't know so much. I mean, injuries are a part of that. Age is a part of that.
And also the league last 3 years. I mean, there was no Steph Curry to talk about 3 years ago, right?
That's right. And I think but the larger issue I agree with now, you know, Harper, is that he's just not a dude that is going to lead a locker room to run through walls, you know?
Right.
Now, part of the issue that Jalen Rose has is that Melo is making a ridiculous amount of money. I think he's, you know, on a 5-year, $125 million contract or something like that.
Correct.
Which is a significant amount of money, for sure. And well, kills your cap.
I mean, for currently. You and me, Jason, I mean, that's throwaway money, but...
Sure, exactly, you know. Yeah.
For James Dolan, it might be a hit.
Yeah. But going forward, with what the cap's going to do over the next 2 to 3 years, like... It's not really a killer to have Carmelo on your team. Like, he's still a solid player. And if you can bring in a guy or develop Porzingis into a guy that's the leader of your squad and bring in a good coach, you know, that Phil Jackson can puppeteer to play the triangle, maybe that's a winning formula?
To Carmelo's credit, he did come out, what was it, last week or 2 weeks ago, and... You know, said when it comes time to free agent recruit, I want to be at the head of the table. I want to be the guy out there helping these guys get here. And I still think he has some clout in that respect. I still think that he is a guy that people really like as a person. And, you know, he's got the X factor. He's cool. Carmelo's just cool. Always has been. And so I think he does have some ability to do that for his organization. It's way too little. It's way too late. And he's not going to be the leader of this team, but he could help them create something that is useful. What I don't know is once he's gotten some marquee free agents to the franchise is whether he's going to be content being second or maybe even third banana to these guys. I think that really remains to be seen, and that's kind of what he's setting himself up for, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if he wants to compete for Eastern Conference championships and potentially NBA titles, he's going to have to be a second banana, I think, right?
Well, how long has Melo been in New York?
3 or 4 years, something like that.
But who? Yeah, that sounds about right. Who is he drawn to play for the Knicks in that time?
Kristaps Porzingis.
He works his magic through the draft. Apparently,
he was going to not sign his rookie contract.
Yeah, Aaron Aflalo, I guess, is the marquee.
If that's your win, something's not working right.
Amari Stoudemire, would you count Amari Stoudemire?
No.
I would not. I would not do that.
Okay. Sorry, guys. He played really well there. I guess, actually, he was there before Melo got there. So,
yeah. Never mind. I mean, Melo's been there since 2010-11. Time flashing.
Yeah, I guess, like, you know, I he's saying that he wants to help draw these free agents in, but, like, he hasn't done that yet. No. And he's been there for... some number of years, some number of unsuccessful years. Sure.
Mm-hmm. And it may be a situation where it's a little bit too little too late, right? But it may also signify that Carmelo Anthony has made a bunch of money. He's happy. He's starting to care about his legacy. He's starting to become a veteran, right? And he's willing to put himself out there for his team and change his role a little bit. I mean, maybe that's it. I think that you'd have to have a you got to sit down and have a conversation with the guy about where his head's at.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, and the other thing is that, you know, he has a no trade clause. So if you're Knicks management and you just want to get rid of him, it's not as easy.
Yeah, he has his bird rights, your bird rights, Joey's bird rights.
Yeah. Bird rights.
I just gave mine away.
Hello, give me my bird rights back.
Yeah, it's I don't know. Well, it's interesting. We'll see what happens, how this shakes out. But I mean, if he's offering to help negotiate free agents, you know, if hopefully this is not in lieu of playing good basketball. Hopefully it's not, you know, in lieu of helping his team win on the floor.
Well, I think this is just way too much on Carmelo most of the time, too. I mean, when you look back, like, the second best player for his team when they were supposed to be good 4 years ago was Amari Stoudemire. Like, how's that going to work, right? Like, they do need an infusion of talent. He can be a really productive veteran if he embraces that role, right? I mean, he's still got an awful lot of gifts. And if he's willing to play within a system, learn the triangle, and, I mean, potentially mentor a guy like Boogie and kind of teach him how to have fun and respect the game at the same time, that's actually kind of dangerous.
Is that a thing that Carmelo is capable of doing?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't see why not.
Like even if you were willing to do that, like...
I mean, Carmelo's not a knucklehead. He's a lot of things, but he's not knucklehead.
That's true.
He's sort of, you know, I would say that he's been a selfish kid for a lot of his career, but that's not a knucklehead. And frankly, if somebody, like, I've always said, if somebody gave me $100 million, I would die in, you know, a torrent of cocaine and hookers, right? Like, he hasn't done that. He's been a little selfish as a ball player, maybe, but he's done a lot better than I would have did.
Shout out, Mama Harper.
said a torrent?
Yes, a torrent. A hurricane. Oh, wow. The title of this episode will be "Mom, Don't Listen to This Show."
It's a huge hypothetical, though. There's no way you're getting near $100 million.
Well, and I mean, again, I'm not 22 anymore either.
You know? Yeah.
And that's the thing. He came into the league and he had a lot, and you know, what a star. I mean, he's been a great advocate for the game in a bunch of ways, and people love him. He's always had that. He really has a magnetic personality that I think still stands up. And so does he have the willingness to do it? I don't know. But I really think that he has the ability to, especially with a guy like Phil Jackson backing him up or a coach like Brian Shaw, you know?
Yep, for sure. Yeah, and it would be good to see Knicks basketball. As much as I hate the Knicks, it's good for the league at some level when Knicks basketball is exciting and competitive. You know.
It's been a while since there's been a good team in New York.
Yeah, I mean, they made it to the playoffs, to the second round that year that Roy Hibbert stuffed Carmelo Anthony at the rim. Right? That was their most recent playoff success.
The block.
Yeah. But when your playoff hopes get shut down by Roy Hibbert, you weren't that good of a team to begin with.
Oh, man. Cut to Roy Hibbert.
That was a double diss. It was a double diss.
That was the Pacers diss, too, man.
I know. Well, Knicks pay a triple. I checked all the boxes with that one.
Nice. Gentlemen, anything else you need to discuss this week?
No, I just hope that the Xavier basketball team is winning games.
Spoiler alert, everyone, your bracket is broken.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And go IU, for those of us who didn't go to Xavier.
So, yeah, for the tournament, I always go Xavier, of course, number one.
Which is why you win your bracket every year.
I learned to stop even trying. In a cost-cutting measure. I vote for, IU. My wife went there. I vote for other, after that, Big Ten teams and Indiana teams. And everyone else can pretty much, I like underdogs too. Everyone else can go lose, in my opinion.
Fair enough.
It's my professional analysis. So go Big Ten and go Indiana and go Xavier.
And go Oregon.
Shout out to the Ducks.
Trying.
You sound so sad about that pick.
I know. They're not going to run at IU for a very long time. So, yeah, go Ducks. I'm with it.
Even if they make it to the Final Four, you can just drive over to campus and it'll be an awesome party, like, everywhere.
Yeah, this is true. Yeah, there's some real upside. My rule has always been, though, when I move to a new place, I don't root for that team for, like, 5 years.
Hmm. It's like getting vested in a retirement plan or something.
Right, exactly. So, you know, I don't half-ass my fandom at all, right?
That's respectable.
Yeah.
That's full-ass stuff right there.
Need those assful chaps that Chuck Person was wearing.
Well, Harper, the good news is if Oregon does well, you could find yourself in a torrent pretty easily.
Sure.
A torrent of patchouli and natty ice. What do the kids drink these days?
I don't know. What do they drink?
Bieber.
We were talking this weekend. Whatever happened to iced beer? Do you remember when iced beer was a thing?
Yeah, there was Ice House. What else? There was Ice House. What else was iced?
There was like every brewery had you know, like there was Natty Ice.
Yeah, they had
there
like was a Bud ice. I remember that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Smirnoff Ice.
That's still a thing.
Is that still a thing?
I think so.
I would imagine.
Right? I do not hang out with enough college girls. Apparently.
Hanging out with exactly the right amount.
You got to get on this train, man.
You don't know me. Yeah, I don't know. What about Red Dog? You guys ever drink a lot of Red Dog?
Red Dog?
Red Dog?
That sounds like some Southern shit right there for sure.
I don't know. We always had Red Dog.
It was a beer?
We had Mad Dog.
No, not Mad Dog. That's definitely different.
We had Wiedemann's. No.
I'm very familiar with Wiedemann's. It was $2 for a six-pack. I remember that stuff.
I hung out with you like every weekend in college. How did I never drink Red Dog
more,
with you?
That was more in high school.
Oh, okay.
It was some Ron Colley stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, we were classy with the Rip, baby. We drank Mickey's.
Oh, yeah.
Classy.
And whenever we could get our hands on some Honey Brown or some Killian's Red.
Oh, we just...
We were really classing it up those nights.
To the dome.
Sweet beers were popular in high school.
Boons.
What's the other one?
And whatnot.
The people that drank the, Aftershock.
Mm. I forgot about that.
It's like a hot cinnamon like liqueur, I guess. I don't know.
It's like a precursor to
like
Fireball.
A Schaps. Okay.
It was no good.
It was no good.
And there was a blue
version. It was called Aftershock. Like that.
I wouldn't
do it. It's
such
an unfortunate name for a liquor.
Yeah. They had a red flavor and a blue flavor. I don't know what the blue one was. Mint or something. I don't know. On that note.
Good times.
All right. Well, until next time, you can find us on Twitter. We are at Undebeatables. We're on Facebook.com/TheUndebeatables. The website is TheUndebeatables.com. There's a contact form. You can send us all a message. You can review us on iTunes. Really helps new listeners find our show. Thanks to everyone who's rated us there and left nice comments. We got t-shirts for sale.
And for our once and always coach, Bobby Slick Leonard, now in the Hall of Fame. 529? Turn out the lights. The party's over.
Just like Willie Nelson himself.
I tried to make it really bad in lieu of Coulson, but I don't think I quite got there.
No. I think what's going on here is I think you're late nights, you're sneaking out to like college karaoke bars and killing it.
Well, I think really what we're learning is that the level of Coulson's ineptitude is something to astound to.
He works really hard to come up with new ways to take that to the next bottom tier.
You gotta respect that.
I bet he's pretty upset that he missed the conversation on crappy beers.
Shout out.
All right. Yeah. Hope you're doing well.
Feel better, Mom Coulson.
I've switched a lot of things in my life, but it's never worked out. I switched to being a vegetarian, but ate more bacon than ever. Every time I switch lines at the grocery store, I never pick the fast one. But one thing that totally worked out is I switched to Metro PCS and got a free Samsung Galaxy.
Make the right switch too. Move to Metro PCS and get a free Samsung Galaxy J7 with a huge 5.5-inch screen. Metro PCS. Wireless. Figured out.
Coverage not available in some areas. Plus sales tax. Excludes numbers on the T-Mobile network. See store for details, terms, and conditions.